Hello, and today at Uncle Data we have Niko Korvenlaite, who is a co-founder and CTO at Reconfigure. So I guess, you know, like the whole story why we got into talks, you know, with Niko is when he started a small discussion, or like, you know, the he and his co-founder, Richard.
Yeah.
Richard, I guess, you know, it's the Richard. Proper... Richard?
Okay. Yeah, he's Richard, yeah.
Okay, so when we they saw my one of my articles complaining about data modeling, and then we started, you know, like talking here and there, and then, oh, let's do a podcast. You know, it's like they're like very, very eagerly, you know, like jump to this. So, so Niko, can you tell us a bit more, you know, in general about the Reconfigure and what you're actually doing and how it's related to the topic, you know, what we're going to cover?
Okay, so data modeling and Reconfigure, like the story of Reconfigure starts from my co-founder, Richard. He's actually my best friend for 20 years, and he's a marketer originally. And, well, he had to learn how to work with data because of, like, and all the marketing systems needed to be integrated, and they required numbers from marketing. And he hated the part of, like, and learning how to do SQL, because, like, he had to implement the modern data stack with dbt and friends. And then we realized that he must not be the only one struggling on it and building, like, in the end what Reconfigure does is we generate and compile the data pipelines from the raw data to the domain or semantic layer, and, well, to help people to actually construct the data into a really business usable format. One of the big aspects is data modeling and helping people to actually format the data in a way that it makes sense for the business. So basically, Reconfigure is a data modeling GUI that also spits out dbt code.
Ooh, okay. So that's, I guess, helps a lot of things and a lot of people to get started.
Started and moving faster and...
Okay. But when we're talking about the data modeling, right? So my assumption here, you know, from the looks and from the talks, I understand you're not that big of a fan of, you know, the star schemas, you know, and the dimensional modeling, right?
Yeah, that is true. Like, and I don't believe that star schemas belong to a data warehouse. Like, if you are building, like, a data warehouse to be the source of truth for the whole company, and, like, and I go back to the definition of, like, the original definition by Bill Inman from, like, 30 years ago or so, like, a data warehouse is a subject-oriented, integrated, time-variant, and non-volatile system for management support or, like, decision-making support. So in that sense, like, and if you want to have it, like, and really integrated and really, like, a subject-oriented so that a customer is a customer, contract is a contract, like, a star schemas don't have a role in that. Like, of course, on the reporting layer, some tools work better when the data is formatted in certain ways, and there is a place for those special cases. But if you are building, like, and really want to have it, have, like, the data warehouse to be the really source of truth and really matching to the business, the simplicity of splitting things into dimensions and facts just doesn't work. Because sometimes the same entity can be a fact somewhere else and dimension somewhere else. So I never, like, and managed to build any, like, a mental model that would help me to build, like, a data warehouse, because it didn't match the business reality that I was facing. That I need to, the data needs to represent the business first and match the business logic first, and then after that it can be, like, formatted in a way that supports a specific reporting needs or whatnot. But it first, the source of truth needs to be.
Okay, so basically the actual Inmonian way, right?
Yes.
Figure out, you know, the model, and then based on that you build iteratively, you know, what's for the reporting needs. When we're looking at the Kimballs, it's like, you know, build a data model for a specific reporting need.
Yes.
And then, you know, if you have some, you think of ways how to join them, you know, and, like, do some other manipulations. Yeah. And it's for Kimballs, it's also hard, you know, when you have, like, bridge tables and those come into hand, and then some people don't even know what those are, how they work, how to provide many to many. And then we end up with one big tables at some point, you know, and other monstrosities.
Yes, exactly. Like, and the quick and dirty way. Like, and of course, like, and when you have like the first report that you need to be building, like, and because, like, and you have to be able to deliver fast and like fast. And in that sense, like, and sometimes it feels like and more natural to just like and skip the kind of like a design part and jump straight into like providing answers. Like, and of course, like, and in certain cases, you can buy more time with that. And I think like an the Kimballian approach of like and constructing the data warehouse from an set of data marks that are based on like a star schema and dimensional modeling has similarities to the I think the currently I think really popular without the so-called query driven development where people like an analysts given the power of DBT are just like a jumping in and like and creating materialization like and one by one for each question coming and like and I think like it has like a similarities of like and we need to be able to answer this business question quickly and construct the models for that instead of like and first taking the step of like and hey how does our business actually work and taking the time on designing like and how does the business work and what are the core concepts in the business so that we can actually ensure over a longer time that the reports do align and people are getting like a trustworthy data.
And we don't have multiple sources of truth, right? When it's a decentralized data team, right? And one department has one definition of active and another one is like different. And they're like, why our numbers is not matching? Yeah, it's because you're not aligned on these things. And you don't have any proper ways, I guess, to ensure it, at least with the current tools available. Continue, sorry.
Yeah, because like, and I think like, and there needs to be like a certain level of, I'm a believer of like, and in a certain level on the hub and spoke model of the team structure, like, and centralizing the tooling and the core definitions, but like, and splitting out the analytics. Capabilities to the teams because like then it's neat because like the analytics needs to be close to the domain experts and the analyst like a domain experts are the best to answer the questions but like and one needs to centralize around the core definitions in the company to help alignment on the data.
Yeah, that's true. What I also saw, you know, that works best is actually when you have like the data engineers, like, you know, as a core concept, you know, they're sitting together defining, you know, the latency ingestion standards and these things, and they just give out a properly available and easily understandable data model for the analysts. Or, you know, the later with the rise of DBT analytics engineers, you know, to create, if needed, you know, some data marts or things, you know, to speed up the process. Just because, you know, I think we have an issue with the tech at the moment, I guess, you know, because a lot of tooling here is around, you know, OLAP-based approaches, right? Yep. And they're not entirely supporting well, you know, what's more approachable in RDBMS approaches, right? With the indexing, you know, like making those things run faster. Yes, they provide bonuses on the column on the aggregations, but when you have joins, you're... Damn, this query runs so long.
Yeah, I think like that is the like and we a lot of the data modeling like and if we go to the like and the physical design of data, we still like and are lacking like and the technology is lacking behind. Like and if we think for example like and loop back to the dimensional modeling, like and for reporting purposes, when it was like and designed, it was like and partially driven by the limitations of the technology of the time. We don't have that limit, like that limitation anymore. We have different kind of limitations, and I'm so happy to see more indices coming back into play. Like, and I think like we realized that the last 10 years of like and just throw everything into a columnar format in an infinite storage and then just slap enough compute on top of it wasn't the correct answer. I'm like a huge fan and I'm following, for example, the data warehouse product Firebolt, which has brought the like an aggregating indices and like a join indices back to the game. I'm really like waiting what Google will come up with the BigQuery because they just in the summer released to the preview that you can use the search indices also to speed up and optimize the queries on point lookups, so that if you have defined the search index on the columns, it is not only usable with the special Google search formatting of the query, which is a stupid extension to the SQL that they have, in my opinion, and not following the standards. But the same index can speed up queries where you have, like, if it's a string column, if it's an equals query, starts with, and I think it was also like the like queries, which is really like, and I'm so happy to see this kind of like, and the indices coming back into in the fashion, people realizing that the 40, 50 years of research around the indices, like, and wasn't actually for nothing. And this, like, and I have like an high hopes that we can actually efficiently build highly normalized data structures in cloud data warehouses without having the performance penalty and needing to do like an summarization pipelines. But well, we'll see.
You know, what I see, you know, what goes around comes back around, right? We saw, you know, the, in general, data modeling being a topic, you know, which started, oh, we have data leaks, we don't care about it, right? And then we see, you know, we're back at it again. We saw, you know, people, you know, compute became cheap, right? So let's throw money at the problem, right? We don't need to think about the architecture or proper designs. And now we see indexes coming back as well. You know, it's like, it seems like, you know, people are like, yeah, it's, let's ignore this problem. You know, oh, maybe that was actually a good idea. Let's get back to it. But what stuck to me is that you mentioned, you know, like about the modeling, right? Good normalized models, you know, coming back, you know, into the play. So let's talk about fundamental knowledge. Because I have a feeling, you know, that a lot of people are just familiar with Kimball because it's kind of, you know, a standard, you know, because it's easy to understand, you know. And so what would you say, you know, people should have to brush up on or like what do should they practice on, you know, for a good data modeling?
I think like step back, people should start not from like a technology and data perspective. Like, and too often I see that people start looking at problems that, hey, I have this data, how do I build this report and whatnot, but like, and have the knowledge, like, and you cannot be a good data modeler unless you have like a really good understanding of the business and also from the technology and the limitations of the technology and the data that you are dealing with. For example, most of the BI cases, you can, with the number of data isn't, the size of the data isn't that big, so you can actually do you don't need to like and hack things around or like and play with the physical limitations anymore. So understanding the limitations of the technology you have available and then the data that you have available, but the most important thing is like an understanding the business, like, and really brushing down on the not on just like the physical design of data, but like the logical and especially conceptual modeling. And it doesn't need to be, you don't need to learn how to do like all the details of ensemble logical modeling or like the BEAM, like the business event, whatever analysis model or whatever, or learn how to draw perfect ERDs, entity relationship diagrams, but be aware of these concepts and like and be able to. The biggest skill, I think, is the ability to ask questions and be really pedantic the better one can learn how to elicit and like and draw out the information about the business logic and the business rules out of the people who actually like conducting the business, the better you get at modeling. Because like, and then if you can draw the logical conclusions from those descriptions and what are the business questions that people are trying to answer, the data model kind of like and comes quite naturally from those like and from the logical derivation of the information. For example, like and reconfigured, it is an tool which is used by users. Okay, we have a clear concept of a user, but who pays the bills? Like, and it's actually a company, an account, who has a subscription of our product. So there we have already, like, and when we think from the business perspective, we already got the three core concepts of our business, like the user, the account, and the subscription. And then we can start like thinking about like where do we get the data and what are the attributes, what are the natural keys of these things, what are the like and physical primary keys that we need to build. But it's all about like and setting the technology aside for a while and having the discussion and the strict definitions and being, and I repeat myself, like I'm being sometimes really annoyingly pedantic with the questions. Like, and the classic example that I have is that you have a CEO of a small company and he says that I want to send like a hand signed Christmas cards for our top customers. Give me the list of top customers. Well, then you have to start asking questions like, what is a customer? What does a top customer mean? Top by what metric? The CEO might have like the revenue. Okay, the revenue by what time frame? Like the lifetime revenue, the last 3 months of revenue. Is it like the annualized revenue? Like, and then like what actually is revenue? Is it the financial department's definition of like what, how much money did we actually get after all the discounts and credit notes and whatnot? Is it based on the product usage? If we are a SaaS company, for example, with an usage-based pricing, or is it then the bookings that the sales originally sold to them? Like, and what is the definition of it? And as such, I think it's an also a mental state of like being able to put yourself and being a proud, humble servant. Like, and the one thing that like, and how I see myself. I see myself closer to court jester, if you think about medieval times, than a lord, because I don't want to be part of the politics and the power game. I'm the court jester, and usually the jester in the old medieval courts was the only one who was able to criticize the king without losing their heads, and as such, like, and often became the most trusted advisor of the king because they were outside of the power play of the other ones. And this is like, and this is how I see myself, like, and the kind of like, and also knowing one's place, that the data modeler, the data architect, the data engineers, the whole data teams, their purpose is to serve, and you can be proud servant, and I'm a really proud and humble. That's...
So what you mentioned, like, for me, you know, it's like, you know, the logical, physical model, you know, ask questions, you know, to get understand, you know, this kind of, what's the needs of, or like, you know, understand the logic of behind the, all of the, like, I don't know, connections and these things. For me, it looks like, you know, it's like the natural data modeling approach, right? You define the conceptual model. Like, all of these, you know, it's like in the right order, right? You're defining the entities, the relationships. Like, your answer is like completely by the book, you know, how you define the processes, you know. So what I actually love, you know, is that people don't know, I guess, you know, even those three standard steps, you know, and how are they defined. And that's, I guess, what causes, you know, some issues and makes like query-driven development.
I completely agree, and like, and it's a lack of knowledge and lack of awareness. But also, I think there is a certain level of misunderstanding that these exercises would be really long taking and expensive. Like, because it doesn't need to be, and you don't need to like and model the whole business at once. Like, if you can get like the few core concepts drawn on a whiteboard and in a one session, that is already more than most companies like and have, which is a funny and sad thing at the same time. And then you can, when you have like the core concept, because like the core concepts in the business don't change that often. The details of them change, where the data lies, what are the most important attributes, how the attributes are calculated, those can change. But if you are a certain type of business, the core concepts, like, and if you are selling something, you have products, you have orders, you have customers, it doesn't change unless you like and really change the whole business model. Yeah. Model. And then being able to then act on that information in an iterative way, like, and what is the most pressing business question we have right now? And then like, and materializing from the core models only the things that are actually needed, and not needing to define every single possible attribute, because like that's what I've seen, that when people start modeling, they are like, okay, I have this concept of customer, I need to have all these 30, 50, 100 like an attributes on it, and then I'm asking like, but why, like, and what is the most pressing business question that you're trying to answer right now? Example, we like our longest standing customer Camunda from Germany, and the first thing we help them to do is to actually pipe data between CRM and product analytics tool, so that they can do product analytics with the firmographics. But we spent the time of like actually defining like how is the business working, and we materialized, for example, for the most of the entities, just the ID, because we didn't need anything else than just the ID. And that model has then like and stayed the same and just like an evolved and like and grown, but the core entities defined in the beginning of the project are still there because they match the business concepts.
Ooh, that's a nice approach. Didn't think from that end, right? Actually, because if you have ideas, you can incrementally add all what's needed, you know, as you go on. You just alter table, add column, and then, you know, calculate it, update it, and whatnot.
Yeah, whoa, and especially and nice. Especially when you're dealing running with the DBT world, like, and adding columns is quite easy task. Of course, like, and mileage depends on the tooling and the volume of data, but like the idea that we only need in the beginning the identifiers of the core entities required to answer this question, so that we can, for example, build the relationships between them, so that we can actually combine the correct data to correct place. And when that solid foundation is there, it's really, really, really easy to extend.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking, you know, so how does like this is kind of comes from your, you know, from reconfigured, you know, using as of and valid from and valid to, right, fields, and with the business model change, right? Yeah. So with these ideas, so you can capture, you know, like also the changes, even if the business changes, right? Relationships most likely might not change that much, or, you know, if they do, you know, we just add a slowly changing approach. Yes, usually it's like a completely different model if they pivot, right? But why you prefer as of and valid from and valid to?
Oh yeah, because like the time is often pain in the ass, and if we want to build a good data warehouse, it needs to have like the capability of answering what was the state 3 months ago, like, and to be able to do, for example, cohort analytics, mm-hmm. even in a B2B concept, like a setup, like, and what the leads that we had in January, how have they actually evolved mm-hmm. over time, and for that, and I just like and want to build the models or like the physical design in a way that it's as much of append only as possible. It is because like an updates are expensive. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's an operational database, just Postgres, updates are expensive because it's an insert and delete, basically. Mm-hmm. So I try to aim for a logic which allows only like an appending new data to the tables, and as such, like, and the I have basically two time columns, which are because like, and I want to have a bitemporality. So both the business, like, and when was the business logic valid, and what was the time when we were able to see this validity, so that, for example, for an audit purposes, we can go back that what was the like a valid price, like, and what was the window of time when someone might have seen a wrong offer, for example, and then like, and are there like customer success claims actually correct? Of course, like, and usually you, when customer complains, you just like give them the discount or return, but then you can like later on analyze that how many of customers might have seen, for example, the wrong pricing on the page. So I have two columns, the loaded ad and then the as of. That is my my like an approach to byte temporality instead of like the intervals, because like the intervals require updating a column with window functions, and analytical databases are, if you have like a defined thing, for example, the clustering key correctly, they are really fast at calculating the windows. So getting the, when needed, getting the validity window. For example, when I'm constructing time-based relationships, like, and with joins, because relationships do change often. Mm-hmm. For example, if you are a B2B SaaS company that has a seat-based pricing, the team memberships flip all the time, and the roles of the people in the team, they flip all the time. I call these the oscillating relationships, because like they go on and off and on and off, and then you need to, for certain reason, to be able to calculate when was this person actually member of the team. I don't know, it might be that you have a data breach or whatever, and you might need to be able to know that who actually had access to the tool at certain given point in time.
Yeah.
So for these, like when calculating these, I do construct the validity windows within the computation so that I can join over the validity windows within the query. But then when I materialize it, to be able to, as much as possible, to append only loading, I converted it back into as of, and then when needed, closing the validity window with a tombstone when there is a deletion or removal of things.
Ooh. Okay. Sounds to me like, you know, it's like a very good combination if you have data flowing from CDC, right? So you can use the same approach and you can just, you know, pipe everything through and then take from, you know, when you actually ingest it, you know, then add, you know, the as of if it's needed and whatnot. So it already fills like the neat spot, right? Of like having everything pouring to data lake uncontrollably with some validity added on top.
Yes. Cool. And this is like, and also like, and you mentioned CDC, like the whole idea is that, because I believe that the, in the BI world and analytics world, the streaming will, like, and the batch processing and streaming processing will eventually merge. And like, and I've been thinking about the logics and the update logics of how could they work both on an, on like an batch processing wake, but also in an, when the data is coming as a stream, as you mentioned, like the change data capture. So that how can we make it so that when we get a new update information and row to do minimum amount of computation to then append to the tables, so that we can then eventually have the near real time data pipelines and whatnot, depending on like and how well our platforms will support them, but the logic like and tries to minimize the computation needed when there is a new data coming in, and it also scales to batch processing as well.
Yeah, nice. It's like, you know, you're already thinking, you know, how to make move everything from Lambda to Kappa approach, right? Where everything is a stream, if you need to, you know, just adjust, you know, the window, you know, you're ingesting. And I also see it as a very neat, like a feature for data science teams, you know, where they have feature stars, right? And they have, you know, exactly they need as of timestamp, you know, so you're shooting two birds with one stone.
Yes.
So, nice.
Yeah, because like, I don't believe that there is like an, I actually hate the division between like, and you have like the data science tools and the machine learning tools with feature stores and whatnot. And then you have the analytical tools with like an data catalogs and whatnot. And then you have the product data engineers and whatnot, and they have their schema registries and whatnot. And I'm like, and why you're all the same? Like, to me, you are all the same. and the better we can unify the infrastructure. Because, like, and I'm a strong believer that the technological advance will help us, like, and in most cases, to have an unified data infrastructure for all of these cases. We just launched our case study with one of our customers, Yepli, and they first started with BI, and then they moved to embedded analytics with the same data sets. And they are serving their customers with the same data sets that they first built for internal analytics. And I just can't wait, like, what is the next, like, and on the, but it's still like the same data set powering everything.
Oh, so I guess now it makes sense a bit of your post, you know, like, you have to do proper BI before you do AI, right?
Yes, it's nice. all about like a stacking the investments. You have the good data pipelines that are maintainable and evolvable, piping into the core business concepts, because, like, and then it can be used for business analytics, then it can be used, well, in Yepli's case, for embedded analytics to bring the data back to the customer, and then next it will be like a predictive analytics, and then when you have predictive analytics capabilities, then you can go to prescriptive analytics, and then eventually to machine learning. But, like, and it all kind of, like, stacks up on the same, and if you are building the foundation in the same way, you can actually do it in a with much less engineering resources and much quicker way.
But that makes sense, right? If you're doing it right, you know, you have to do less adjustments, you know, as you go, because, you know, usually it's a lot of tweaking here and there to suffice some specific business need. But I guess the biggest issue, what I see with these approaches is, right, and why query-driven development, you know, is taking, you know, like, leaping forward, you know, like, everything is pushed aside, is that actually it's hard to create a business case for business, you know, to showcase, you know, that, yeah, if we're going, you know, to do this, you know, we're going to take, you know, a bit longer to establish, you know, the ground truth, you know, and where we're starting, you know, then this relationship between them. Maybe you have some advice, you know, how to build a case?
That is because, like, I'm strongly believing that building it properly doesn't take any longer time. And, well, of course, like, and most likely when the business starts to go into data, the first person assigned to the data task, they just need to deliver something first. They just need to provide that there is a value in the data that they actually provide. And in that sense, like, and doing the first iteration might be like and really quick and dirty. But if you continue and you don't have a way to, for example, graduate from that to doing things in a proper way, you might not like, and there is a challenge that you're like then taking more and more tech debt. The first result need to be like a proof of concept. This is what we can do with the data, quick and dirty, and then having the like the conceptual exercise. And because, like, the conceptual exercise doesn't need to be a big one. It can be like and really really short, like, and in an hour you can get so much information out of people's head if you can get the kind of like the main stakeholders into the room, or like and being interviewing with them, and then implementing the core models. As I said, like, they don't need to have like you only pick the attributes that you really need for the first like in business, or like the, for example, not the first but the second like an iteration, because like the iteration speed is all that matters, because the data end users rightfully so work in a loop that give me what I want so I can actually tell you what I want. This is actually an quote from Bill Inman's Building the Data Warehouse, and that is like a 30 years ago written book. So he used the term decision support analyst, but like the same thing, like, and you need to be able to bring data so that people can then ask the right questions. And it requires just like a discipline discipline. I know this is a bad answer, but like, I'm trying to draw the kind of like the conceptual model and then like I'm implementing that into the data warehouse or like the data platform or DBT project, and then just like enforce oneself to pipe everything through that domain model when it's something that it's pushed to production. Of course, there is always need for exploratory analytics. There is always need to go directly to the sources and do like an exploratory analytics and like one-offs. And that is completely fine. The problem is that when the exploratory analytics becomes the dashboard, and there is no way of like, and hey, can we actually do this? We show it as a one-off. And then there is the discussion of like, and do we want to see this report continuously? Or was this actually? Because sometimes we also have the problem that people ask questions and then analysts create a new dashboard. And it was looked at once and then never again. So there needs to be like an understanding of like when there is a new question that cannot be answered with the current data sets or with the current dashboards, to really like and just do the first iteration like and really quick and dirty, so that one knows that is it something that requires to be productized. Because like, and if it was a one-off or a number that needs to be pulled once a year, who gives an F? Like, and if it's a like, and don't try to automate everything and make everything properly. But then when you need something that it, when it's a core metric for the business, so this is something like, and you get from the initial quick and dirty analytics, hey, we want to actually follow and optimize this metric. Then you need to have the way of like, and okay, how does this relate to the core entities that we have, and push it to the right places of the pipeline, so that it, because that brings the trustworthiness of for the data, because then it's guaranteed that it goes through the same rigid flow of data, so that the joins are actually written correctly and the data pipeline has the production quality that it needs to actually be used in the decision support making or even automation.
Okay. Oh, sounds to me like, you know, like you said that it's not like, you know, the proper, like, you know, the concise answer like of this, but what I get out of it, it's quite simple, you know, is the first thing first, like with your modeling, you know, with star schemas or you know, snowflake schemas, you actually, you know, have to think about, you know, some things, you know, you do, because, you know, otherwise you have to do lots of updates or, you know, some changes later on, which are painful. So here, you know, the core idea here is to know where to say why you need this, you know, and you need to say in some places, you know, no, we don't need this now, right? So you have to know how to scope it and how, you know, to push where you need more information. And then from there, you know, always just continue with these two and you figure out, you know, if it's like, you know, one-off, right? You say, oh, we need the automated one-off. Why? How often you're going to do that? How is this going to happen? And then, no, we're not going to do this. And that's a good example.
It's all about the conversation. It's all about the conversation. And then, for example, when we talk, for example, like the topic of data trust, that smart people know that all the numbers are wrong. There is no such thing than like 100% accurate number. Smart people know that. And most likely, usually the C-level people are smart people. But being able to also like communicate to them like what is the accuracy or like the most likely accuracy of these numbers, like, and okay, hey, they need an answer right now. Okay, I will pull this numbers like and in a custom script to be able to show them something, and then say that this is most likely like an 4 out of 5 times right, and then they know that okay, can I make any decision based on that? Because like an even the 80% right or 90% right number will give them some ballpark where it could be, and then we can start asking like an okay, is this a number that we need to see like an every day, every week, and what are the decisions being built on top of this number, like, and how accurate can we actually make, how accurate do we actually need to make it, like what are all the possible corner cases that we might need to take into consideration, like, and does it and then have the discussion, like, does it matter? Like, and of course, like, when it's about financials and money, it really matters. But if it's like a marketing metric, like an or a sales metric, it doesn't often matter. I know that people want like the numbers to be as correct as possible, but that is another educational avenue of like, and hey, the numbers are always going to be, they are never going to be 100% right, but what is the accuracy that we need? That it, does it matter that if it's a 5 or 6 or like, and if it's a 5 or 50, that's a problem. So and in that sense also, like, and hey, we need this number once we get it, like, and really roughly, like, and somewhere on the correct ballpark, so we can make the quick decision now. And okay, then we realize that okay, we need to be relying on this number all the time. Let's put it and let's put the effort of calculating it really right, or like an at least like a 99.9. Because like, and if you look at the distributions of the data that you are dealing with, like, and what are the, how often does and some occurrence actually happen, like, and if it's a 1 in 100,000, like, and you miss that, does it really matter? Depending, of course, like, and because like, and the more you try to take the corner cases into account, the more computation are you going to throw at it, and the costly it will come, and longer it will take to answer the question.
And you have to take into considerations also, you know, like these things, like, let's say if it's AML, right, you miss some, you know, money laundering case, and like, they're going to be fine. So
yes,
there are a lot of things what comes into consideration when choosing those things. So be careful and mindful how you're doing them. Some are there, some are good with this accuracy you provide, some are not. But I guess it all boils down into you when you cited, you know, Bill Inman, right? You give people data and they tell you, you know, what they need again, right? It's an iterative process.
It's a really iterative process, like, and that's why data warehouses aren't built at once. They are not a revolutionary step, they are evolutionary. Once again, Bill Inman. 30 years back.
And also love that, you know, actually you're putting emphasis, you know, on the communication. Because I tended to see, you know, that like the data engineer role, right, is, you know, like more like coming, you know, people sitting in the basement, you know, just like coding, and they don't care about, you know, what's happening. But actually in data, it's the most crucial thing to understand, you know, and to ask questions to establish actually what's wrong or right, you know, if it's needed or not, and these kind of things. So that's a very, very neat approach. And I guess it also sheds some light on the data engineers in general, because, you know, how usually people know, you know, that they have data engineers, or like when their work is noticed, when something is broken, right?
Yeah.
Because that dashboard is not showing the data. Oh, it's data engineers, let them fix it. If it runs smoothly, it's those guys, you know.
Yeah, and I think like the problem here, like that is, I can't remember, like, there was some study about like what is the biggest like a disconnects in organizations, and it usually is between the business and the data teams, which is like, and really like, and that puzzles me a lot, like, and what are you data people doing, like, and if you're not serving the business, like, you are the business, and like, and I've heard like, and you need to be able to understand the business so that you actually know, like, and why you're building something. And for example, with the, like, and if you're just coding the pipeline, you need to understand, like, the business concept of the, or like a context of the pipeline, so that you know, like, what is the, what is actually, like, needed from the pipeline, and not needed, like, and you don't need, what does a real time, for example, mean? If it's a fraud detection in a credit card thing, the real time needs to be quite real time. If it's a business decision or like a business metric over a business that works on like an, let's say like an on a daily cycles, a daily sync isn't real time. Like, and depending on like what is the, how would I say, like the tick time, like what is the incremental, like what is the increment in the business that matters, or in that business question that matters. And if you're just like and focusing on the tech and like and taking out the newest and coolest and shiniest tools, you're not really helping and you're not bringing any value to the table. And this is something that I've seen in different kind of conversations that people are saying that, hey, the data that is flowing in from the business system, the business people broke my perfect data model. No, you just didn't understand the business, or like, and then you need to go and ask, like, why, for example, did they do the thing that, like, and what is the business reason for doing a thing that caused a data that you weren't expecting, which also, like, and leads to, like, an understanding, like, and monitoring the data flowing in. And then when there isn't some unexpected data, going to ask the business person, like, and what is the reason behind this? Because that is a problem on you, that you didn't really understand the business processes well enough to be able to build your pipelines and models to support those kind of business processes. And another aspect that I've seen is that when you're just focusing on the tech and, like, and you're not really focusing on what is the like, and thinking about the business context, is that you might start do local optimization on stupid metrics, or like, and looking into, like, and silly quality metrics. One thing that I saw recently was that, hey, we are looking at the how many percentage of our DBT models are documented and how many of the columns are documented. It's a completely a vanity metric. It doesn't matter, because most often the documentation will end up being, this is an email address in a contact. Well, does it tell anything more than the column name and the context where it is? What it's important to document is when you have a complex calculation and explaining why that complex calculation is being done, what are the corner cases, or what are the assumptions on which it relies. Everything that is, like, and self-explanatory, such as, like, an email address on a table called contact, doesn't require documentation. And, like, and being able to actually, like, and also prioritize one's own work based on the business context, like, what is actually meaningful and when something is good enough, and go with that.
That's true. Though, you know, on the tech part, right? So from my end, what I see, in some cases, you know, if you're saving costs, that's very important for business. You know, if it's doing the same thing, but, you know, just slapped a different label on it, right? It doesn't matter. You can do that, you know, if you want. You can do it on the side, check how it works, you know, but first comes the business value and, you know, pushing the business forward. So that's, I guess, why they actually hired you, you know, in the first place, not to POC some things which are not going to be useful. And that's cool. I'm thinking, so in your case, right, as I see, you know, you mentioned, you know, reconfigure this generating, you know, DBT models. So I guess that's one of the tools. Any other standards you see, you know, uprising on your end?
I'm really, like, I'm interested to see, like, the what's happening in the activity space, sometimes, especially in digital businesses, it's not like, and some of the things are not like, and as much of like an entities, or like, and I know, and those, like, an entities, and where we have, like, a core concepts, but when it, like, that has been solved, and that has been solved for, like, a long time. But when it comes to, like, an analyzing event streams, and especially, like, an behavioral analytics analytics, or what did the users do and whatnot, like, the activity schema has a really good ideas, for example, but I would not recommend, like, and just going with the activity scheme. It has a good ideas. I like some of the ideas, and then like, and like a standardization of certain metrics, like that, like when you have a certain type of business, you like, and you have, and like, and most likely the metrics that you're looking for needs to be the same, regardless of, like, in your business. I know that each business wants to be unique, and they are unique in certain ways, but certain metrics, if you're in a certain industry and a certain type of business, like, and you don't need to reinvent the wheel. So, like, and some of, like, a templatization of that, and then, well, the I'm preaching the Inmonian style, and some people has been have like an relabeled it is the entity driven or like the entity centric modeling, which is well nice rebranding, and like because I'm a strong believer that the semantic layers, the more natural language processing things combined with a really nicely structured semantic data model with the information from the knowledge graphs and whatnot. And I see that I'm just like I'm preaching the entity driven or like and really normalized and clean data structures because like that will unlock so many other things. And I've seen that I'm not the only one like I'm preaching this approaches and there are like more and more people joining the crowd.
Nice. But when you mention semantic models, I guess, you know, when you have every neatly relationships defined, you know, and the relevant metrics documented well, right, you can plug in LLMs and then you have, you know, a chatbot who can answer, you know, the most basic questions, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And especially like when it's not just like it's about the metadata. The metadata is the king and like the semantic information of like, and what does a certain column mean? What does a certain table mean? What does it represent? And that combined, like in the large language models, weaknesses are the strong sides of knowledge graphs and the vice versa. So combining those two, and then when you have like the data already like and laid out in a really nicely semantic way, that will like unlock so many things. That is like why I'm like 100% focused on helping people to build the data into the shape that it is usable with the upcoming tools.
Nice. That's really nice, you know, to speak with people, you know, who actually, you know, don't see everything like as a star schema, and you know, they have a, let's say, I even see myself sometimes, you know, as a data fossil, right? Because you know, you're like, you know, seeing, you know, the cycle already repeating, you know, like, and we're back to this again. So we are actually, you know, battle test some of the approaches and know actually how it's going. So it's super nice, you know, to get the to pick their brain to understand how they're thinking, you know, when what they think are the future, how it will go forward. I guess I'm kind of out of questions apart for one where I ask people about their book recommendations. So Nico, what would be your recommendation for the listeners?
Okay. So lately, like the couple of favorites I have is the Fundamentals of Data Engineering by Joe Rice, and then there is the Data Model Storytelling. But if you're like that is another book, Larry Burns, I think, is the author. And then one of my absolute favorites, like, and if you're like an analyst coming to analytical engineering and whatnot, like, and really understanding the fundamentals, and for that, I recommend the Designing Data Intensive Applications. That is my all-time favorite because it like an understanding like and why something, and it's an not even a hard read.
Yep.
And
then
the funny thing that I've been recently like and skimming through is actually the 30-year-old classic Building the Data Warehouse by Bill Inman. If someone has a hard copy of the like an first edition, I would be happy to buy. I've been reading it from like and from the Internet Archive because we can borrow it from there. Some of the concepts has of course outdated because of technology has evolved, but the core concepts like and rock solid.
You, as usual, you know, the core doesn't change.
Yes.
Nice. So thank you, Nico, for having this nice chat. Was lovely speaking to you. And
thank you.
Hopefully, you know, the weather will be at least a bit warmer. But it's winter, you know, so who knows. So thanks again. And for the listeners, see you in the next episode.